That's hilarious.
All right. Well, it's great to be back. We are on episode 3 here of Prevention on Point. And we have a special guest today. I'm going to first introduce Tara here, our co-host. Hey, Tara, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. It's nice to be here again. Yeah, our first guest. It's pretty exciting. We thought we'd reach out to a coworker. So we have Robert Hoyt here. We like to call him Bob. So, Bob, welcome to POP, Prevention on Point.
Welcome, Bob.
Well, thanks for having me. And I'm very excited to be the first guest. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, but I think I'll manage. I think I'll be all right.
As long as so I have cool to have you here. It's really special to have you here. I mean that. Yeah, this is great. You have that. Just such a wealth of experience and knowledge and also lived experience. And Tara and I just thought it would be a great idea to get you on the show and talk about what you're passionate about.
No, thanks. And well, you can't see it on the radio, but you're making me blush with all those nice things that you said. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and I think it's important, you know, when we talk about prevention, the past two episodes we've talked about alcohol awareness and stigma and a lot of work, you know, as a peer, those things come into play all the time, awareness and stigma. And we just thought that this was a great way, again, I'll keep saying it every episode, education and information, you know.
Education and information.
For these two counties is what's really important, because a lot of times people don't understand the work that is done by so many people in this area. It's really our goal for this radio station segment is to give that education and information to our twin counties. And part of it is people that work in the human services field. So, you know, Bob will share, you know, Bob, I think what would be really interesting is for people to hear what your role is in our community.
Okay, no, great. You know, and it's all important, you know, thanks. Prevention, the education piece, it's needed in the community. And sometimes it could be, there's a lot of information out there. And it could be confusing as to like what, who's doing what and how are they doing that, right? There's always questions around peers and what exactly is a peer. You know, part of my role, I'm the program director at Greener Pathways, which is the mobile outreach program of Twin County Recovery Services. And we have a team of peers, certified recovery peer advocates with lived experience who, you know, how do I want to explain it? I guess I would say through their lived experience, they help advocate, educate, mentor, and through their own experience, help navigate recovery and recovery resources. So, you know, we have peers that are located, certified recovery peer advocate in our community, both Columbia and Greene counties. There's a peer at our hospital. We have a peer in the court systems. We have a peer in the clinic. We have outreach. We have a high risk mitigation peer. And that's all very complicated sometimes when you hear it, right?
Yeah, but I want to go back to what you just said there, certified peer recovery advocate, mm-hmm. because a lot of people hear that acronym CERPA mm-hmm. and don't understand what that stands for and what that human being is going to do in our community. And we hear peers a lot because there's peers in multiple areas mm-hmm. of human services. There's mental health peers, you know, what we're talking about here today is the peers, and you're a peer, I'm assuming.
Correct.
Okay, so and that's the CERPA. So again, certified peer recovery advocate. Actually,
you know, it's CERPA, but like a Sherpa, because we're helping you along your journey.
Oh,
right?
I like that. I like that.
Yeah, a little fun thing that we do with that. yeah. So being a certified recovery peer advocate, the peers take a specialized training credentialing through New York State. They're certified in New York State. It's 50 hours, and they do a medication assisted treatment piece, and a large piece is the peer ethics, which is standard, which we operate on as a peer position. No matter where you practice your peer services, that's kind of the standard of what we play by. You know, there's different avenues and different ways you could provide peer services, which that's what kind of can be confusing in the a misunderstanding as to exactly what, because a peer in one agency and compared to a peer at another agency might not look the same.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to delineate, because I also don't think there's clarity on how much of a resource a peer is. Having that lived experience for somebody that is in recovery and or new to recovery, it's it's a lot to navigate as that human being, and having a peer resource, I think, is so important. I also think what something that you said is really important is that this is that certified word is extremely important. People that are going into this have gone through that training. It is a New York State program. Why did you get into these services? Why did you decide to become a peer?
You know, it's just like all great things in my life. It just kind of was presented itself to me. You know, I mean, I'm a person with lived experience. I grew up in Columbia County and history of substance use. And, you know, so I have a little bit of purpose to it. But at the time, my story was I was volunteering at CMH, Columbia Memorial Hospital, while I was in treatment. I was at the Red Door. And while there, there was this idea, talk about having a referral source for people who come in with an overdose or withdrawal symptoms.
Right? And I just want to quickly clarify. So the Red Door is a sober living facility in Columbia County.
Correct. Yep. Okay. Yep. Historically, you know, a men's halfway house.
A men's halfway house.
But it's a residential and reintegration.
Sorry to interrupt. Yep. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. So that's where that started. I was approached because as I was working there, I started to do the referrals, even though it was asked to have medical staff do it. I just kind of jumped in and started sending the referrals to help people, and I would meet them bedside. And that's when the training was offered. It was like, hey, there's this training. We can get you scholarshiped in. If you want to take it, I was like, sure, like it could help me in my recovery, right? And might as well learn as much as I can about
free mental health, free 100%, training.
100%. Yeah. 100%. So I had taken, I did the class. It was in person at the time, and then a position had opened up, and then I applied, and that's how I became a peer. You know, working with, you know, I knew the staff that was already with Greener Pathways. So there was a comfort to that, and like nobody was talking about it, like the stigma, the way, part of the reason why I started to do it myself, the referrals, is because medical staff, not that they didn't care, I could say that, but like they didn't understand addiction either. So it was kind of like the stigma was put back on the client, on the patient, you know, as a bad behavior thing. Like you chose to do this. Like
yes.
This is what you get.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Like, very common.
Play with fire, you know, so that was, you know, that was difficult. Even with me being in the house working there, I still was hesitant to tell people my story, even though it's pretty common knowledge. Like it wasn't a secret, but like I wasn't bandstanding, like talking about it. Like it was something that, not that I was embarrassed by, but it wasn't free information, you know? And that was the stigma that I was dealing with, you know?
I really appreciate that you say that.
No
because
doubt.
You know, that's something that we really want to bring to light. We talked about it in our first episode. You know, if you could just live in somebody's shoes for a little bit and how hard it must be to walk in someplace and get treatment, to just to be humble enough to say, I need help, no matter what kind of help that is, whether it's substance use, whether it's an eating disorder, whether it's mental health, to just say, somebody help me. In this society, it isn't normal for people to always ask for help. We are so...
Especially in rural communities,
we
often.
We take care of ourselves.
Right. This is my penance. This is what I deserve. And like, I did this to myself. And that's a bad neighborhood to be walking around in your head. You know, like not being able to talk about the things that are driving you to do this. And the amount of courage it takes for somebody to call somewhere to get help.
Courage.
The amount of like...
It's a word we haven't used before.
Yeah, the amount of courage. You know, the amount of... You got to be pretty brave to walk into the emergency room while being in whatever condition you may be in. Maybe come in by the police, maybe come in by ambulance. Who knows? But like, or to call that number and wait on the line, you know? It takes a lot. It's a hard thing to do, but it's a big, you know, I congratulate everybody along that step when they might be feeling down on themselves just because of their current situation. But like, listen, you made the phone call today, right? Like you did that, right? And like, we'll build off of that. We'll do the next right thing. You know, like you did that today and tomorrow you'll have that appointment and then you'll do this. And then we'll just, you know, put those, keep it moving. Do one, build off, do the next right thing for yourself. And that's kind of what I hope to, I want to empower the person to know that they have the tools themselves to like accomplish what they need to. They don't need, you know, they have everything they need to move forward. You know, believe in themselves, for lack of a better word.
You know, I thanks for that, because sometimes just little words like that. Just the word courage isn't a word that we have said. We've spoken about how hard it must be, but
we talk about
I love
the
positive spin.
But we don't talk about the overcoming of the stigma.
Yeah.
You're getting through the barriers.
Yeah. As you've been a peer and you've seen peers work in our community, how has that been for you? Do you see peers as a welcome site in our community? Or again, is this, you know, I'm hoping this is what this episode does today, is it does give people information about what our peers do, so that maybe if you do see somebody in the hospital, or maybe you see the Greener Pathways RV out somewhere, you might be like, oh yeah, okay, now I understand what they're doing. So I guess that's my question.
So there's a tremendous value to having peers in the communities and different agencies in what we do as well. I mean, there's room for everybody, and the more peers, the better. Because I think the secret sauce is like, so part of the peer and client relationship is it's collaborative. We're gonna identify some things that you might want to address, some things you might want to work towards, some milestones, some things you want to correct. And that could be, you know, we're literally and figuratively meeting people where they're at, right?
Mm.
So we try to build off of that. Like, it's not my agenda, it's what you want to do. And it's, you know, we try to improve their quality of life together. You know, it's, I'll never have a, you know, peer would never be sitting across from a table saying, like, this is what you need to do and this is how you need to do it. It's like, hey, let's identify the things. Like, you know, well, what's your recovery? Because sometimes people have never been asked that. Like, they have no concept of, they didn't know there's a bigger life than what they're going through. It's like, what does your recovery look like in a perfect world with no restriction?
One of the things that I understand about this work is that you learn motivational interviewing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this idea of actively listening, mm-hmm. and asking open-ended questions, mm-hmm. and getting the motivation to come directly out of the person, like you said, meeting them where they're at. And that's a real beautiful skill that you all, your team really has. I really admire that.
Part of that, thank you for saying that. And you know, the team, they've been committed to the work, you know, they have purpose in the work. So, and I think that's what shines through, is that there's a little something to it that's more than surface level. You know, they see the purpose and need and desire and the empathy to work, you know, build a working relationship with somebody, you know, who might be having like the worst time of their life, and be able to be there to talk with them, to problem solve, to in a non-judgmental way with us, with a peer not having influence over like their future or their freedoms. Because that's why, you know, a lot of people are suspicious of, you know, being honest. You know, and like to be able to put that wall down a little bit, you know, is part of the little secret sauce.
No, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. You used the word empathy, which I think of as another $1 billion word, mm-hmm. along with courage 100%. In this whole equation.
Mm-hmm. Empathy is a strength, not a weakness. And like the sooner people can get on board with that, the better we'll be. But, you know, it's not a. It takes a lot to be, you know, put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Like, sympathy is like saying, oh man, like your shoelace broke, like that sucks. But like empathy is like, oh hey man, I know what it's like to have my shoelace break.
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. If that's a good analogy, I don't know if the shoelace one's a good one.
No, I think bringing totally. It to something simple like that is exactly it, instead of another scenario. If you were to have like a wish list for peers, in our community, you know, where are peers being held back from providing services that you see as needed in our community? I mean, as we all know, we live in two rural communities here. You know, these counties are rural. They're seen as prevention deserts.
Mm. Prevention deserts.
You know,
deserts.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so... I could talk to any non-for-profit agency in either of these counties, and I'm sure there would be millions of wish lists, and some of them might cross over each other, but a lot of times they won't, because we each serve such a different population. And even though the three of us work for the same organization, our work is extremely different in many ways. And I think that's, you know, my question then is, you know, how could peers provide more services or different services?
No, that's a good question.
With a wish list.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like if I could have peers anywhere in the community, Columbia or Green, you know, there's a lot of vulnerable populations out there, and it's hard to connect with certain demographics of people, so to speak. Demographics, I don't necessarily like that. To expand into all these little touch points where we could have contact with somebody that might go unknown, like in the court, right? Like somebody gets a ticket, maybe like a petty, you know, drug charge or whatever, possession, and we might not see them. Like historically, they just kind of come and go, and like we're missing those people. Or, you know, like the unhoused, right? Like housing's a huge issue, as we know. Yeah. You know, working with the Department of Social Services to, like, if somebody comes in and applies for benefits, who might indicate, you know, it'd be great to have a peer there. It'd be great to have a peer at the medical office buildings, at the hospital, you know, all these little spots at like pharmacy, you know, not to say everybody who gets medication has an issue, but that's kind of where historically that's where it starts. So just like, just to educate, not to say anything, more Narcan, being out in the community more, just to be there, be available when somebody is ready to, you know, have a conversation about recovery. If I could have a peer in every corner, I would. Just to be available, I think. Which would be beautiful. One of these days, we'll get there. We're working on it.
I was excited to learn, and I know one in our community, a youth who's a SERPA now. Mm-hmm. There's even a program for people that are minors that are in recovery. What a beautiful thing that is.
And there's specialized training now for the SERPA class credential, where they have SERPA youth and they have SERPA family. They have a justice impacted training specific for that hospital setting. So the more kind of niche that we can get, you know, because you could do a generalized peer support, like what our traditional peers do, like connecting people with resources. You know, I say the big things, but they're all important. You know, connecting somebody with detox and rehab, if that's appropriate, medication assisted treatment, if that makes sense, community resources. Support groups, you know, the 12-step mutual aid support groups in the community, do something like that. I mean, we've gone to court with people to advocate for proper treatment, go to the hospital. We've gone to the DMV to, you know, help them fill out paperwork.
Like you said, really, truly meeting people where they're physically at.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see somebody kind of come alive and like while working together, you know, because it's tough work. Like it's uniquely challenging. And
each person, it sounds like you're seeing as an individual, right? And just because somebody's asking and reaching out for help due to substance use disorder doesn't mean that they fit in that peg hole that was created.
Yeah, good point, Tara. You know, we in our field as recovery professionals, we talk about how one size doesn't fit all when it comes to recovery. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating but difficult part of the work, I'm sure, Bob. Recovery looks so different for everybody, right?
100%. Like, and that's what we try to identify. Like, what does it mean for that person to be well? What does that look like for them? You know, it's nothing. There's not a standard to work with a peer as to like what success is, you know, who's drawn that line, like who's writing that rule, you know, like to be asked the individual if this is what, if they're satisfied, do they feel it was successful? You know, we're big on harm reduction. So if somebody isn't ready to go for abstinence, we could talk about like harm reduction and moderation management and how to be safe. Cause like if somebody's going to use drugs, we know like people are going to use drugs. Like we know that, right? And then build a plan around that and how to be educated, fentanyl test strips to protect themselves. But also, you know, if abstinence is the goal, great. That's wonderful. Let's work on that. How do we do that? Like, what does that look like? So, I mean, it's really bespoke recovery.
I like that.
You know, we try to personalize it. That's, you know, with the resources that we have and what they indicate. Yeah, absolutely. You know, William White, who wrote the white papers, was a big advocate, you know, in the beginning for it. The history is, like, if I remember correctly, I'm not a complete historian with it, but started with like Connecticut, the CARC program, which
CARC, which stands for
Recovery Coach, certified,
certified something
advocate, recovery coach,
certified advocate, recovery coach.
So, I'm not too sure. Uh-huh. And that's a different training as well, very similar but also different. So, and there's, you know, there's different titles: peer specialist, peer engagement specialist, recovery coach.
What I wanted to say is, I just think it's very beautiful to be able to use one's lived experience. Mm-hmm. And take some of the most difficult parts of one's life and incorporate them back into this beautiful work and doing something positive.
You're absolutely right. And it's, and that shows that recovery is possible, right? I jokingly say, like, I get to use my powers for good now.
I like that.
That's good.
You know, going through some of the life experiences that I had to navigate while in active use, and then be able to like understand that and be able to connect with somebody over that and like let them know that it is possible to come out of that hole. Like, you know, this isn't the end of the story. If you want it, it's sometimes, you know, if it's not an issue for them, then it's not going to be an issue for me. I'm not going to tell somebody they should change their thinking, maybe give them different perspectives and say, hey, well, like, is this where we're at? You know, is this what you want? You know, but to be able to take something that caused so much pain and strife in one's life and then turn that into like something they use as a tool to help heal and be able to tell your story of what it's like is something special to see.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to, you know, topics again that we've spoken about, the stigma around substance use disorder or again anything, you know, mental health, the color of your hair, who knows, right?
Right.
Sure. Texture of your hair.
Exactly. What stigma has your staff and or yourself as a peer advocate received in our communities? Or has there been any, I should say?
I think everybody, especially now, has a better understanding of what we do and what recovery is, because you know, you can't look too far without somebody being affected by it. So nobody's really in the dark anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's no longer really like a valid excuse to not, not educate yourself, you know? So some of the stigma is a big one that we've gotten is like, you know, we're just enabling. We're just, you know, like we're not actually helping any, like, how are you helping somebody by Narcaning them? Like, how many times are we going to Narcan somebody? I'm like, that's the wrong answer, my friend. Like, I don't know how to explain to you why it's important to care about your community. Like, I don't know how to better explain that. Like, these are people that, you know, they're a whole person. You know, they're just not like, you know, the derogatory like addict, like junkie, or you know, drunk.
Words we've
right?
said.
Yeah.
Words we've spoken on this.
Yeah.
Yes, we've talked about some of these stigmatizing words. Yeah.
100%. Because language matters. You know.
It really does. Words. 100%. Words are powerful.
Yep. And, you know, so we got that a lot. It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, how many, you know, you can't find recovery if you're dead, right? So, like, yes, until they...
There's a bumper sticker.
There you go. Yeah, T-shirt. Yeah.
Patent pending, copyright.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many times, you know, until they get it. You know, I personally went to treatment 7 or 8 different times before I stayed in recovery. And I learned something more, but as every time, it was like, if I didn't do that, you know, I didn't give up, even though I thought I was too far gone. But, and I want to let people know, like, that they're not. Like, this isn't how the story has to end. And, you know, I'll reply sometimes as a professional and as a peer when I hear somebody speak that, like, that sort of, that language towards it. I'm like, when they ask how many times we're going to Narcan somebody. And I was like, well, what if I told you this? What if I said that, would you say I don't deserve to get Narcan? Because, like, if I didn't get Narcan,
it's a powerful statement.
You know, like put it that way. Like, you know, what about your whatever family member? You know, anybody that you know. It's like, just because you see them as somebody different, less than, is rather than a resource, somebody who's a whole person with a whole set of life and complications and, you know,
we don't
challenges.
Know their story. Yeah,
you don't know their, and when we until we decide to like ask them their story, we're just going to make assumptions about them, what they do, what they should and shouldn't do.
Assumptions.
How they should, like, yeah.
Right.
You know. You know, and I think that really brings up something that we've heard a lot in the news over this past week is how our overdose rates are down. And I think I just want to make sure that people don't have a misconception that substance use is down. The reason why our overdoses are down is because of this lovely thing called Narcan and the work that you and your staff are doing, and a lot of people at multiple agencies throughout these two counties, and having Narcan available. There are less overdoses because of education around Narcan and the use of Narcan, and that should really help with this stigma problem, I'm hoping. And I'm glad that when I've heard reports on the radio or I've read it, they are being extremely clear that these rates are down due to this life-saving substance called Narcan.
Harm reduction saves lives. I mean, that's, yeah, that's it, you know. And Narcan, it's such a blessing. And as far as, like, the overdose numbers, you know, like, the numbers are down, but also, like, the fatal overdoses are down.
Yeah.
So that means that the Narcan, it's getting to the people who are actively using and using a safety plan, using life-saving skills, like, you know, so they're educated. So now people are going to, now they have an opportunity to maybe, you know, change the way they're living if they decide to, you know, if they decide to. It's always about, it's a voluntary thing to me. Like, recovery is super, super personal, but, like, it's also not unique. And, like, the between the communities and the community agencies and the Narcan distribution, I think we're pretty lucky. I mean, in a lot of ways,
yeah,
for Columbia and Greene County to have such a acceptance between agencies and legislatures and decision makers in the community, that makes things just that much easier.
What else? I mean, you know.
Well, I think if we go off of, you know, the stigma, if someone does come up to you or your staff, mm-hmm. and I think I was actually with your staff one time with the RV at a location, mm-hmm. and someone said, well, my family does not need that. And I said, it's just like first aid. It's just like CPR. Like, everybody should be trained in it. Do you hear those words a lot? Do your staff hear those words often? And then how do you handle it? Or how do you...
What's my rebuttal?
Yeah, I had the same question.
What's my approach to that?
You know, same question.
Because you don't want to turn that person off. Yeah. You know, you want, again, to educate and inform, right? You want that... Not saying you're going to change people's minds. That's not necessarily the idea. But if... there's education behind it, because as Brian said, and you said earlier today, you know, we have all been touched by someone with substance use disorder as a human being in these two counties. Everybody has had a friend, a loved one, a classmate, a coworker, you know, the person you see at a gas station that, you know, gives you your coffee in the morning. Everybody knows someone.
With the Narcan thing, and when somebody goes, well, I don't use drugs, or I don't do that, I go, no, it's not we're not assuming or making an accusation that you use drugs, and you can't Narcan yourself, so it's not for you. It's like, so sometimes the approach I'll do is like, hey, if you or anybody you know, like, here, take this Narcan for you or anybody that you may know who could use it. And when they say, I don't know anybody, I go, well, you're a person about the world. Here you are coming to the RV, like, you're in the community. Mm. It's a good thing to have in your first aid kit. What's beautiful about it, and the reason why we could hand it out so freely, is because it only affects the opioid receptors. And if you have, like, if you have taken an opiate, it only affects that. So it's not going to interact with, like, medication that you may be on. It won't, like, make symptoms worse. It only affects you if you have opiates in the system. You know, if somebody doesn't have opiates in their system and they take Narcan, all it's going to do is maybe give them a little runny nose.
Right.
Like, it's not going to affect you. It's not a controlled substance. It's not illegal to carry. It's just like having an EpiPen.
Yeah. Now, well, listen, Bob, I appreciate you coming in today, you know, letting people know about the wonderful peers that are here in our two counties, not just in your department, in again, several agencies throughout both counties.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob. Again, we appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Prevention on Point.
Thank you,
Prevention,
Bob. We've had Bob Hoyt here, the director of Greener Pathways Mobile Outreach. Thank you, Tara. Thanks for taking time to talk. Thanks, everybody. We will see you in 2 weeks. And we are going to be...